In March 2026, YouTube and Meta faced judgments related to unsafe and addictive social media products. These cases follow other high-profile examples of litigation, serving as a last resort after policymakers had failed to address evidence that products could harm the health of their users. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Jerry Avorn, a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, co-director of the Program on Regulation, Therapeutics, and Law at Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital, and the author of the book Rethinking Medications. Dr. Avorn has written a perspective article about the role of the courts in limiting product-related damage to people's health. Dr. Avorn, could you start by talking a bit about these March cases? What were the claims, and what did the juries decide?
Well, there was a question or a concern going back many years that social media might be designed in a way that is almost intended to potentially harm the mental health of vulnerable users, particularly adolescents. And there's been very interesting, both anecdotal and epidemiological evidence that young people who are extensive users of social media might be presented by design with information that may worsen mental health problems, whether it is about self-harm or isolation or eating disorders. And that seems to be an issue which we've not been able to come up with any either regulatory or legislative solutions to curb that problem.
So what's the current state of those March cases? What were the judgments, and are we looking at appeals?
Yeah, we always are looking at appeals in our legal system, at least until it gets to the Supreme Court. And there were some eye-popping judgments. One was for $375 million in a case brought by the Attorney General of the state of New Mexico. Concurrently, there was another judgment of $9 million. And in a separate jurisdiction in Texas, there was another very large multi-million dollar decision, all of which concluded that the various social media platforms, Meta and YouTube in particular, had designed their products in a way that would, in a sense, increase addiction to them among vulnerable people and then present them with information on their scrolls that would actually lead to potential damage to their mental health or to self-harm. Now, yes, in the second part of your question, of course, everything is always subject to appeal. And we do not know now, since these cases are so recent, of course, the social media companies will appeal. And what will happen on appeal at the moment is anyone's guess.
And then looking at Congress and the executive branch, what actions have they taken or considered taking to protect consumers from the potential health harms of social media products?
Well, as listeners and readers will know, there's been a lot of talk about it, but there has been really very, very little to emerge that anybody could recognize as strong regulation on the executive side or strong legislation on the congressional side. And in a sense, that relates to the theme of my piece, which is when there are years and years of evidence that a product is causing health harms, if neither the executive branch nor the legislative branch does anything to curb that apparent harm, that is a role that can be taken up by litigation, whether by individual plaintiffs or by representatives of entire states, such as their attorney general or attorneys general from multiple states, as we've seen in other cases, to try to fill in the blanks when we do not have the government per se able to limit health risks from given products.
In your article, you compare some of the features of these cases to litigation against Merck over its promotion of the drug Vioxx and litigation against cigarette manufacturers over the health damage that their products caused. So broadly, how did those cases turn out?
What struck me in thinking about the recent decisions against the social media companies of such eye-popping magnitude, that there really was a similarity with two other very important cases over the last number of decades, in which we had two other obvious causes of harm to the public health. In the first case, tobacco, going back to the 1990s, and of course, evidence from the Surgeon General's office going back to the 1960s that there was a problem. And also against Merck, which had been selling over $2 billion a year of its blockbuster anti-inflammatory drug Vioxx, or Rofecoxib as the generic name. And again, there were many of us who were saying, and in fact, are a fair amount of research documenting, that there was an elevated risk of cardiovascular disease, whether myocardial infarction or stroke, in people taking Vioxx compared to people taking other anti-inflammatory drugs after controlling for all possible confounders. And in both instances, smoking causing lung cancer and a number of other diseases, from cardiovascular disease to other cancers, and Vioxx raising the incidence of heart attack and stroke. In both instances, there was evidence that was there. Many of us were completely convinced by it, and yet neither Congress nor the executive branch, particularly in the case of the FDA, did very much to mitigate that risk. And at that point, in the cases of Merck and tobacco, as in the cases of Meta and YouTube, it fell to individual citizens or attorneys general operating on behalf of people in their state to bring it to the courts in litigation. And that at the end of the day, that is what finally moved the needle. And in all three cases, well, two and a half, we don't know the resolution of the social media litigation yet. But in each instance, there were major decisions on behalf of the plaintiffs when they brought suit. And more important than just the many billions and billions of dollars in those first two cases that ended up coming out of the settlements brought by plaintiffs, we also saw meaningful changes in policy that the executive branch and the legislative branch had not been able to achieve on their own. That is, tobacco companies were limited in their ability to market drugs to kids or young people in general. The tobacco companies were also limited in their ability to deny that there was a health risk to their products. A lot of curative or ameliorative projects were put into place, such as all those famous anti-smoking ads that many of us remember. And in the case of Merck, there was some, besides the nearly $5 billion with a B, dollars in settlements that were awarded to plaintiffs who had experienced heart attack or stroke after taking Vioxx, there also was a sea change in the way the nation monitors adverse effects of drugs that was enshrined in law a couple of years later as a direct result of the embarrassment that the nation had no mechanism in place as of when Vioxx was pulled from the market in 2004 to reliably and systematically look at what adverse events were happening on a large scale in drugs that had been approved. So both of those first two cases did result in meaningful change that had escaped the capacity of the executive and legislative branches. And it's just too early to tell whether the very large judgments against the social media companies of just a few months ago are going to have the same effect or whether they will be watered down in the appeals process.
So why did those legislative and executive actions, despite the evidence, not happen until after there was court action?
Well, there's another interesting similarity that explains that, I think, across the three examples, which I think of as Marlboro's, Merck, and Meta, although that's an approximation. In each case, there were enormously powerful industry interests that were fighting very effectively to prevent any regulatory action or legislative action to potentially harm or reduce the sales of their products. And it's common knowledge what the tobacco industry did in terms of trying to deny the link between tobacco and various forms of awful diseases, from heart attack to various cancers. And we also now know that there's an enormous amount of influence by the pharmaceutical lobby in general, and Merck in particular, in denying the idea that their drugs, particularly in this case Vioxx, were the cause of important cardiovascular damage. And that seems to have effectively paralyzed both the FDA and Congress in terms of their taking a stand on this. Our group had published an observational study a year before Vioxx was taken off the market, demonstrating that link, as had other groups around the country, in what we felt was a very compelling way. But Merck managed to convince the FDA that it should not take any action because it was not clear that there was a risk. And it was only when Merck's own study inadvertently showed that there was a doubling of risk of heart attack and stroke when they did their own randomized control trial that they finally saw that the jig was up and they had to withdraw the drug. And I became involved in that litigation, and it's described in my book, Rethinking Medications, and looked at what did FDA know and when did they know it? What did Merck know and when did they know it? And it really has become kind of a poster child study of the government not doing what it should have been doing until it was basically kicked in the head by irrefutable evidence, at which point everything changed.
You do say in your article that involvement of the courts can sometimes advance problematic causes. So what are some examples, and is there any way to protect against that kind of outcome?
Yeah, that's a very big caveat to all of this. Well, it might seem that in some instances, like tobacco and social media and Rofecoxib or Vioxx, that in a sense, litigation came in to save the day, and achieve a goal that the public wanted, even though the government thus far had been unable to achieve that goal. Nonetheless, it is a weapon that can be misused as well. And for example, we know of litigation that has been brought forward, sometimes by the same attorneys that brought forward the Vioxx or the Meta cases, in fact, accusing the makers of Tylenol or acetaminophen that their drug caused autism, which of course it does not. And there was another interesting case that I wrote about in my earlier book, Powerful Medicines, of a perfectly reasonable product called Bendectin, which was used as an anti-nauseant in pregnancy, which from all the evidence we can look at rigorously did not cause a problem. But there were plaintiff's attorneys that were gathering cases of women who had children born with fetal anomalies after taking Bendectin, who scared the manufacturer so much by virtue of successful cases based on poor data that the manufacturer said, we just can't afford to make this drug anymore because the cost of litigation is far more than what we could possibly make as a product. And they took off the market a perfectly reasonable product. So it can go both ways. And that's why I think of it as really a last resort. What we would much rather see is systematic, thoughtful, proactive actions taken by either the regulatory branch in the form of the FDA or by Congress by passing laws that will mitigate the risks that are these three kinds of products and others to come in the future, no doubt, might have on harming people's health rather than doing the, I think of it as kind of in case of fire, break glass, sort of last ditch effort when nothing goes on year after year after year in either the legislative or the executive branch. Litigation does become this potential last desperate effort. But as you point out, it can also go awry. Usually those cases don't survive very long, but it's a messy way when you have people suing Tylenol makers for autism and Bendectin makers for fetal anomalies. It does become a messy weapon as opposed to what one would prefer, which is a thoughtful, deliberative, evidence-based process in either the legislative or the regulatory branch.
Finally, and getting back to the social media products, what do you see going forward as the appropriate roles for the various branches of government in addressing the potential health harms associated with these products?
In some ways, the big picture issue is similar for tobacco, social media, and problematic medications. That is, for the government to take an intelligent, sober look at the evidence of harm. And God knows there's enough weird conspiracies out there about various products causing various crazy outcomes that they don't cause. So that's where we want to bring in science, or I should say bring back in science, to be able to really evaluate these and inform both Congress and the executive branch. These are risks that are worthy of legislative or executive action, and these not so much. And then once that evidence is there, whether it is from biology or epidemiology or clinical studies or psychology, or what in the case of social media, once that rigorous evidence is there, to then put together legislation that does not limit the freedom of American consumers to get what they want, nor of manufacturers, whether it's be of social media products or medications, to sell what they want, but to just draw a bright line and say, this product, whether it's Instagram or a non-steroidal or a tobacco product, we're still fighting the vape wars as recently as this year, this product is too unsafe to allow its unfettered use. And then to create responsible, careful, well-crafted legislation or regulatory policies in the executive branch that will limit its use so that without unduly limiting the freedom of consumers or of companies to make what they want, we still can say this is simply too dangerous to put out there in the marketplace and let people figure it out for themselves. That is not something we want to encourage in the American economy or legal system.
Thank you, Dr. Aborn.